It's time for Sports Lit 101. Bruce Pratt back with us, joining us from upstate New York today. Welcome back, Bruce.
Hey, it's good to be back, guys. It's good to be back. And I'm also, in a sense, just returned from the Sport Literature Association virtual conference. I obviously was unable to participate in much of it, but I did see some things that I think are really interesting. And in the future, we'll try and get some of the people looking into this, into these various things, to join us. So that's one of the things I wanted to talk about today.
Excellent. Yeah. So how was it doing it virtually this year?
Well, it was the second year we've done it, and it was better this year. I was the chairman of last year, the program chair, and so I had the dry run. You know? what's difficult is when we're not in one place, our people are all over the world. We have members from all over Europe and Australia and people that are academics in Korea and China and places. So it's very difficult to get everybody up at the same time. We run on Eastern time because that is the most central. So for me, it was easy. But there were people who days began at 5:30 in the morning, and my friend Casey Simons and Lee McGowan from Australia, theirs began at 11:30 at night. So it was there were a lot of challenges, but it was better this year. We had more people who were facile with the technology, besides Jeremy Lawrence from West Liberty University, who ran all that. So it was really good. But everybody is making their reservations to get to Victoria, British Columbia for next year's meeting, because we really miss seeing each other in the flesh and having those long conversations you can have after a day's conference and around a bottle of wine or a glass of scotch or whatever. So it worked okay. What was really interesting to me was, this is the first time this has happened since I belong, 10, 11 years I've been a member. We had two people give papers on the same text. There's a play by a woman named Sarah Delap called The Wolves, which is about a young women's soccer team. And they actually are in uniform and occasionally are kicking the ball on stage. And as with generally with all sports plays or things, it's about more than sports. So I haven't seen it, but the people that have seen it were just wild about how good it is. So I'm going to get a copy of the play. I'll get you, Bron, to get me a copy of the play and read up about it and see if maybe we can talk to her about that. This was just met. I was jumping in and out of that particular session, and people just really loved it, called The Wolves. But the thing I really most wanted to talk about is something that you and Carrie and I and various guests have talked about. John Corrales has mentioned it. You've talked about it with other Boston insiders. We've talked about it about Maine hockey. And that is, where does the line get drawn between the fan who is rooting for his or her team and the fan who becomes that obnoxious person who thinks they're part of the game? Now, we've all talked about that, but that hasn't been something that academics have looked at. Now, the great thing about SLA is most of the people in it have some connection to an academic institution. Not all, but most do. But they tend to not be those kind of stuffy academics whose papers are rife with jargon and 400 footnotes and 26 end pages. And it's the first time they're starting to look at it in this light. Not just how the media and talk radio and talking heads have emboldened fans, but has literature also done that? Have we started to see these stories about someone's epic devotion to a team start to change the way sports literature works? And this is really in its infancy, and there was no particular paper solely on that, but there was a lot about the way fans are shown in films about sports, like Fever Pitch and Bull Durham. Where does the fans' intrusion into the game begin and end? And I think that in the next couple of years, we'll probably see some very, very interesting papers on that. The other thing I wanted to mention, I just touched on it last week because it had just happened, and it was a paper presented by Grenier Daly on that had to do with the city of Dublin and all of the sports sites there and how they're referenced in literature. And this is literature that, that you know, goes certainly back to James Joyce, who often mention sports sites, and to all kinds of Irish writers, George Bernard Shaw. You know, you could go down the whole list. In fact, I was writing down the list of all the writers as she was talking, you know, like Roddy Doyle and Avon Bowen, Sean O'Casey, Elizabeth Bowen, Seamus Heaney, who all refer to some site in a physical site like Croke Park in Dublin. Now, a couple months ago was the centenary of the first Bloody Sunday, when the English tanks rolled into Croke Park during the All-Ireland hurling contest and just literally mowed some people down in retribution for an attack on the British black and tans. And how, for some people, Croke Park may always be the place you see the Gaelic Athletic League's football finals, Gaelic football being a very different game than soccer or football. It's where you see the All-Ireland hurling final. But is it always going to be locked in the history of Ireland as the place where the Croke Park massacre took place? Mm. Will Wrigley Field always be known as the place where a goat didn't get in, right? will all the kinds of, will our icon, how rooted are our own lives in those moments? I remember Bob Costas talking about how, and I experienced this when I was a kid, he and I think are exactly the same age. When the game was over at Yankee Stadium, you could wind your way down and walk across the field and out through the center field wall. And it was something that was a real rite of passage. My grandfather and grandmother took me there for an old timers day game. And that was a big deal. So as many times as I've been to Yankee Stadium, as many times I've been to Fenway Park, to all the other ballparks that I've visited, you know, that's the moment that sticks in my mind. Well, when literature gets a hold of those moments and we see how it takes a new light. And we mentioned in a book you and I both love, Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk. I mean, I will never think of the Dallas Cowboys Stadium any other way than in the plot of in the motions of that book. And I was thinking, you know, how about the kid who came from El Salvador or someplace and played in Mansfield Stadium, and it was the only time he ever played a game in North America, right? I mean, in the United States. Will Bangor, Maine, and Mansfield Stadium be this iconic thing in his memory that if he becomes a poet or a writer or reflects about, will take on a different kind of aura? And I think that was one of the most fascinating papers I've seen in many, many years, because I had never really thought about that relationship between literature and that iconic status that a place, a sporting place, can take on. So I was really impressed. And I talked to Grania, and she's going to work on a way of we can set it up that we can have her on the show from Ireland. We've had Irish people on before, but to talk about it, and also about a book that I'm really looking forward to getting called The Black Bonspiel of Willie McCrimmon and the Faustian Bargain by W.O. Mitchell. It's a novella that postulated back sometime when it was written that the true Canadians, yeah, hockey was okay, but curling was really the sport. And it's about a guy who makes a Faustian bargain with the devil to win a hurling contest, a Bonspiel, but ends up defeating the devil, if you will. And it's I haven't read it, but Jamie Dopp, who's been on with us, did a paper on that that was really, really good. And the final one that I really wanted to mention, and I'll do it quickly, is my friend Corey Willard, with whom I go fishing at these conferences, but obviously couldn't this year, a brilliant young scholar from Alberta, from Mount Royal University, got his PhD at Nebraska just recently. About a guy named Robert Haig Brown, who was a fisherman who became a snorkeler. And he became a snorkeler because he really wanted to see the fish in their own environment. And he had been an avid fly fisherman and conservationist, and how his whole thinking about fishing changed when he was snorkeling. That was interesting. And then at Don Johnson's house the other night, he said, well, I went the other way. He said, I was never a fly fisherman when I was young. And he was one of the best fly fishermen I knew. I was surprised to know that. He said, I was a snorkeler when I went to college in Hawaii. He played football at the University of Hawaii and went to graduate school there, too. He said, I was snorkeling under the reefs and stuff. He says, I only became a fly fisherman later in life when I was sort of caught by the idea of I've seen what it looks like under the water. Now I want to see if I can get them come to the top of the water. It was a paper that talked a lot about, yeah, we fish. We're first to catch a fish, then to catch a big fish, then to catch lots of fish. Then at some point in time, our feelings about fishing change. And I think that's true about a lot of sports. You know, you and I have talked about the rabid baseball fans we once were and that we're not engaged that way anymore. Doesn't mean we don't like baseball, but our whole feeling about it has changed. And I found a lot of very reflective pieces. Maybe it was the pandemic, but a lot of very reflective pieces this time about why we do what we do, why we like sports, why we read about it, why we write about it. So I'm getting it was all recorded. And I'm going to get electronic files of a lot of things I missed. So there'll probably be some more coming up. But next week, we have a guest. We'll talk about Castro's curveball.
Oh, is that coming up next week? Tim Wendell?
Yeah, Tim Wendell will be with us next week.
That's fantastic. Hey, while we have you here, Bruce, I wanted to mention, too, good news for a couple of members in the University of Maine women's ice hockey team, two of whom were drafted into the Women's League last night.
Yes, and I did not even see who they were. It's been that crazy.
Anna Zakova went 14th overall excuse me, to the Buffalo Buttes, and then Daria
Tereshkina, yeah.
Tereshkina went 28th overall, drafted by Toronto.
Oh, well, that's okay. Dasha is one of the most infectiously wonderful people. And everybody at Maine should know that she majored in, I believe it was kinesiology. She is one of the most literate people when it comes to Russian literature. And I'm a huge fan of the Russians. Every time I would see her, she'd say something to me, and she's got a wonderful accent. She'd say, you know, you're right. I was reading Turgenev, Bayesian Meadow. It was a very good story. I hadn't thought about that. And she's great. Anna had some real injury problems for a couple of years, but she's a gifted defenseman, one of the three Czechs we had at the time. So that's great.
And you were on the road yesterday, so you may have missed this, but the University of Maine won the Walter Harrison Academic Cup, given to the school that has the best academic performance in America East, and five different UMaine teams led their conference in grade point average. Top of the list, no big surprise, Maine women's basketball with a team GPA of 3.92.
Yeah, and I'll tell you something, that's dethroning the soccer team, and those girls were the number one for a long time. So, you know, Amy, you just can't say enough about the job Amy Vachon has done on every level with that program. Gosh almighty, I hope we can keep her a long time. She's a hell of a coach. Yeah,
that would be absolutely good news for everybody involved there. Well, Bruce, we appreciate you checking in from the road with us this afternoon. Travel safely on your way back home, and we look forward to having you right here in studio next week.
I will see you then, gentlemen. I'm going to bring you a Paradox Pilsner from the Adirondacks. Ooh. It's really good.
We will accept that happily. Thank you, Bruce.
Thanks, Rich. Thanks, Gary. See ya.
See you soon. Bruce Pratt on the road, back with us next week in studio for Sports Lit 101. We're